Good day, everyone. Welcome to Nia2X Radio, the voice of the people. I am Nia2X, so humble and happy to serve you today on one of the most important issues facing America today. And we have a wonderful guest who is on the ground, who is there, who has facts, who has information, and he is a wonderful guest that has come to share the information that we're simply not getting from Louisville, Kentucky, when it comes to the Breonna Taylor shooting. Such a tragic incident. We all remember, I know it was a Friday, I believe the 13th, I want to say April, but he will certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but such a horrible tragedy, and it is still ongoing in Louisville, Kentucky, without an arrest still today, and today is August the 26th, 2020. Without further delay, please help me welcome, indeed, our guest, Mr. Daniel Grossberg. How are you, sir? And thank you for coming to share with us today.
Thank you. I'm honored to be on your show today. There is one detail I need to correct, though. You said no one had been arrested. Let's not forget that Breonna Taylor's boyfriend was arrested for trying to defend them when the police did not announce who they were. They have since dropped charges, but the only arrest thus far was one of the victims.
And that is a key point. I appreciate the correction, because we are here on this program to establish the facts, the truth about this horrible case, and you are correct. His name is Mr. Williams. Is it Kenneth Williams?
Walker, Kenneth Walker.
Thank you, Kenneth Walker. And that is a strong point, to have the one arrest when Breonna Taylor was murdered. For some people that may not know of the case, and please help me with the date too. I said April the 13th. Was that date correct?
I don't have the fact sheet in front of me. That sounds about correct. But
I know it was a Friday.
To give people an overview, the police executed a no-knock warrant, which means they don't announce who they are until they're inside the building, on an apartment which was lived in by Breonna Taylor and Kenneth Walker. And the warrant was not for either one of them, but for Breonna's ex-boyfriend, who had been already arrested and was in police custody. But allegedly, in an attempt to find the gentleman that they'd already found, they knocked down their door at about 2 a.m., Kenneth, not knowing who it was, knocking down his door in an unsafe neighborhood, grabs his legally registered firearm that he had a right to have, and as soon as he grabs the firearm, the police begin opening fire on him and on Breonna Taylor, and she was struck 8 times and passed away. But as you and I discussed in a few days ago, this part hasn't gotten to the national news, but we have learned, based upon the 911 reports, that she laid there for 20 minutes before the police called an ambulance to render medical assistance. And the conclusion of the night was the arrest of the boyfriend, who was exercising his Second Amendment rights for self-defense, because once again, the police didn't announce who they were. And since then, a few of the police have been relieved of duty, but there have been no criminal charges. They are saying that it was a big misunderstanding, that the police training wasn't as strong as it could have been, that they somehow weren't aware that the suspect was already in custody. There's one equivocation after another, but there has not been any substantive justice to hold someone accountable for the needless killing of a 23-year-old young lady who did nothing but jump out of bed, startled when people knocked down her door. That's all she did. That's all she's accused of doing, is acting afraid that someone knocked down her door, and for that, she has paid the ultimate sacrifice.
Well, thank you so much, and the correct date is May the 13th, not April.
May 13th, okay.
As I had alluded to earlier. of the Breonna Taylor shooting that our guest, Daniel Grossberg, has just described took place May 13th, 2020. And as you said, their reports is 1 a.m., 2 a.m., but it's certainly in the dead of the night when most people are sleeping, as they were, and then the rest, we are still piecing together. Because as you stated,
it was failures at all layers. I mean, we're piecing together.
No doubt. I want to go back to
what system itself.
No question. I want to go back to another important point that you just made, that for 20 minutes, you're saying no medical ambulance was called to the scene of a shooting that possibly could have rendered some type of assistance. Only God knows if it would have saved her life. But 20 long minutes.
Correct.
That's an important point.
That's a very important point. So even if we assume the best, and let's suspend our disbelief and assume the best, the police on the scene thought that the suspect was not yet in custody and they were seeking out the suspect. They thought that they were appropriate for not knocking on the door. They thought that they were appropriate for responding when Mr. Walker reached for his firearm. How do they still think it's appropriate after striking someone else, letting her lay there for 20 minutes without calling an ambulance? So even if we assume the best of them, there's still that piece that I wish the national media were going on to, because even in a justified shooting, the police have an obligation to render medical assistance when someone is no longer a threat. And a young lady bleeding to death on her bedroom floor is not a threat. So there's something there as to why they waited 20 minutes.
And that's a horrible, horrible long time to not render any type of assistance. Now, I remember the shooter himself, Brett Kinslow, I believe, or Hankerson, I'm sorry, Brett Hankerson, yeah, was actually relieved of his job days after, months after. Now, I'm not talking about immediately, but I thought you just told us other officers, are they still on the payroll? How many officers were there, and are they still being paid today?
You're asking details that I wish I could answer, but unfortunately, with so many police shootings going on, the details of one versus the other sometimes blend in my head. But I know that it was several officers involved. He was relieved for being the most reckless because, unlike the others, he fired blindly. He didn't even pay attention to what direction he was shooting. He was shooting through walls and doors, was not inside. He was on the outside shooting in. It was beyond reckless. But the other officers, my understanding is that they are still on paid administrative leave as they are continuing the investigation. But with him, because he just, as I said, he just started shooting randomly, they have at least dismissed him in a feeble attempt to silence the public and say, look, we've addressed the situation. But firing him is not sufficient.
How many officers were on the scene of the shooting prior to kicking in the door with the no-knock stuff that they have on the books? I think Louisville has that or is getting ready to be removed. How many officers were actually on the scene at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning?
I believe it was 4 or 5, but they were plainclothes officers. And no-knock warrants were on the books. They did actually just finally pass the law, Breonna's law, that repealed no-knock warrants. But here's where no-knock warrants make sense. If you have a hostage situation or someone is a terrorist with a bomb, you don't want to announce this is the police, open up. But this is not one of those situations. This is a situation where the police had them outnumbered, outmanned, outgunned, and even if there were a threat inside, just to prevent civilian casualties and collateral damage, you knock on the door and announce this is the police, open up. They chose to go rogue and take a much more aggressive tactic. And these were not special officers. This was not the SWAT team, which is trained to do a no-knock warrant. These were regular officers with regular sidearms, thinking that they were somehow some movie star action heroes, and that they were going to catch them in their bed, and that would be a nice dramatic catch as opposed to arresting someone at their front door or having to face them down face-to-face. But I'll reiterate that even if you assume the suspects are guilty, which you're not supposed to in the American system, no one would ever say that the bystanders and the other units of the apartment were guilty. Why put them at risk by not announcing that the police are there? So there was something just fundamentally flawed about the system that they ever thought it would be appropriate to bust down the door without announcing their presence. And as you and I discussed just yesterday, the story has changed on behalf of the police, where they now say that they did knock on the door and announce this is the police, but every single witness in that building says they heard the door get busted down and not a single person heard them say this is the police.
Absolutely. I've done a little research on it, and I concur with what you just said. There's a neighbor upstairs, in fact, who said she heard, excuse me, please, no type of mention of who was banging and attempting to get, I'm sorry, excuse me, please, attempting to gain entrance into the residence of Breonna Taylor. Now, from what I understand, Kenneth Walker did not live there. I'm not sure, but I do want to talk about him a little more. I think what really grabbed everybody around the country and the world was the fact he was arrested. Can you tell us, since his arrest, what has taken place involving him?
Since his arrest, he was charged and arraigned. They got good attorneys who have, from my understanding, finally gotten the charges dropped. But this is a perfect example of color bias. I have never heard of a white person being arrested for reaching for a firearm when someone knocks open their door, even if it's the police knocking open their door and the police don't announce it. But because he was a man of color and they needed someone to blame, it's easier to blame him. And the narrative at first was the reason Breonna died is because her boyfriend tried to defend her. If he had just put his hands up and just behaved the way they wanted him to, and we've heard that too many times. I mean, we're hearing it right now for a gentleman who was just trying to get back into his car to see his children. If he had just put his hands up, it's always victim blaming. It's always the person who shot's fault, even if they're not armed, even if they're not breaking the law. And that didn't play well in Louisville, as you know, and there was a lot of activity on the ground that people were asking for not just justice for Breonna, but justice for Mr. Walker, and it appears that he is going to be a free man.
Who's going to be a free man?
Mr. Walker. He's.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah.
I'm grateful. I mean, when you think about what he is still going through, I mean, as you say, a free man, I understand their relationship was strong, and he's there. When this happens, his mental state, we're not talking about it enough. I hope he gets counseling. He certainly needs counseling. And if you're just tuning in, welcome. We are talking, updating, and this is part one, because this is still an ongoing situation. There is so much action that is taking place in Louisville, Kentucky, as we speak, surrounding the Breonna Taylor story, we wouldn't believe. And we're not getting it from mainstream media. There's great.
And the details aren't sexy. The details are dirty, and that's why it's important that people like you bring those details out, because details
and matter. people like you indeed, because we just don't have a clue. We are deliberately, by mainstream media, being led to believe a lot is not going on, and there is a lot going on. Our guest is from Louisville. He lives there. In fact, he is the county commissioner of the A District of Louisville, Kentucky. He's on the ground. He has a lot of knowledge. He is involved with a lot of information we're going to be sharing with you today and ongoing as this case continues to take twists and turns unbelievable, but we're going to put them there. We're going to put those twists and turns out there today for you from our guest. You're listening to Nia 2X Radio, the voice of the people. Early in the morning here, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me. But you can find us at www.blackonblackunity.com. When you get there, just simply click radio information, and you will have the opportunity to hear this show for the next several months. We're not going to take this show down. The information Daniel Grossberg is sharing with us today helps us to understand how deep-rooted the problem of racism, white supremacy is in the police department, and we're focusing today on Louisville, Kentucky. So I took a sip of water. Hopefully that will help. But we want to now go to the marching that has taken place since May the 13th, 2020, upon the shooting death of Breonna Taylor. And as our guest, Daniel Grossberg, has just explained what happened to her boyfriend being arrested and now charges dropped. But on the ground, the
small
community,
detail. That's not enough.
I'm trying to bring the audience to, I'd like to bring the audience to the dedicated men and women of all walks of life and what has been taking place since May the 13th, 2020, and still going on, rain, not snow, but all kind of weather, nonstop. Daniel, you have the floor.
Thank you. You and I met actually at one of the rallies downtown in front of the federal courthouse. And one of the most important fundamental rights in a democracy is the right to petition your government for a redress of grievances. When people think of the First Amendment, they think of free speech, free press, free religion, but they forget that the right to petition your government for a redress of grievances, which is fancy language for to complain to the government they're not doing their job, is also codified in that First Amendment. And you're going to be disheartened to find out that when a number of protesters went to the Attorney General to complain about the lack of charges being pressed against the police officers, the Attorney General had the protesters rounded up and arrested for intimidation. He's claiming that these voters coming to him asking him to do his job was intimidation of a material participant in a criminal case and has actually charged them. So people always should exercise their basic rights, but you and I both know that unfortunately there are consequences for doing the right thing. There are consequences for speaking your voice, but that's the only way that we're ever going to get any change. And I am proud to live in a city that after, at this point, 90-some-odd days of people protesting with getting shot with rubber bullets and tear gas and being wrongfully arrested and wrongfully charged, that we're still willing to go out there to the streets and to peacefully assemble and to redress the government.
And that's the point I'd like to focus on for just a moment, that the citizens, despite of all the pushback, despite of all of the feet dragging, despite of all the impediments that have been put in place from city officials, rather than arresting these officers and bringing them to trial, the citizens have been marching for all of those days nonstop justice for Breonna Taylor. Is that right, sir?
That is absolutely right. We are the proud home, birthplace, upbringing, and retirement of the great Muhammad Ali. And he was a martyr in terms of willing to stand up for what's right and spend time in jail if he had to, because nonviolent resistance is how you get your message heard. That's why John Lewis and Martin Luther King were two of the greatest civil rights leaders of all time, is they were willing to face those consequences. And that's what's going to get the silent majority on our side. And I've seen a ground shift here in Louisville. Prior to the Breonna Taylor killing, most of the silent people weren't very disturbed. And that's unfortunate, but it wasn't in their face. But now they are disturbed because here's a woman who is sleeping in her bed in the middle of the night. And when they were looking for someone else who doesn't even live there, she got killed. And then when other people said she deserves justice, they get arrested. And now the silent majority who was on the sidelines and wasn't bothered gets to see how messed up the system is. That if you are sleeping in your bed at night, you're wrong. If you get shot by the police, you're wrong. If you go protest peacefully, holding signs and chanting, you're wrong. At some point, they've caught on to, wait, these aren't the people who are wrong. It's the system of a militarized rather than professionalized police force that is wrong.
You know something, I'm going over some information as you speak. One article I read was May the 13th. It's actually March the 13th. And that, you know, it just shows you people just say anything. So to those, for the correct date of the incident, March 13th, 2020, Louisville, Kentucky, is when Breonna Taylor, who had no connection to drugs, and as our guest, Daniel Grossberg, is explaining to us, the police came with a drug warrant or an arrest warrant for another individual, for another individual who was already locked up. Whoever the individual was, he was already in jail, showing we, the people, the public opinion, the negligence, the unprofessionalism. I mean, you're paying your police department, and people are like, well, why should you defund police departments? Well, you're not trying to tear down the police department, but certainly there is millions and millions of dollars across the country, and I'm sure in your area, Mr. Grossberg, as well, that could be reallocated into better reasons to help the citizens of each city. Because Louisville, man, this is worse than any scenario you can think of, and what makes it so bad is as of today, there has been no arrest of the officers that have committed this crime. This is a crime, and criminals are supposed to be arrested. So the question begs, why isn't the mayor, Mayor Greg Fisher, why isn't he or can he? Is it true that the mayor has some kind of writing where he cannot arrest the officers while they, or he can't fire the officers? I don't know what it is. If you can clarify to your knowledge why Mayor Greg Fisher, as of today, has not arrested these officers or fired them.
Arresting, that he equivocates and places a lot of the responsibility on others. There are things that he can do. First of all, it is officer, you generally have to have a review board hearing. But I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind that if he attempted to fire them and they appealed it to a review board, that they would still be fired. So he could do that. In terms of charges, he is not on that chain of command for law enforcement to have charges, but it is bizarre that the attorney general has not yet placed any charges. The real issue with the mayor is that at first he wasn't quite taking the issue seriously, and now that he is taking it more seriously, he's not trying to invoke systemic change. He's trying to do just enough to keep himself in power, and people can see that. This is a state that has a lot of politicians who do what it takes to keep themselves in power, whether or not it's good for the people, and for better or for worse, that's the perception of what the mayor is doing right now, because people have demanded immediate and obvious changes that I don't think are unreasonable, such as better firearms training for the police so they know when to shoot and not shoot. It took a long time, but at first he resisted ending the no-knock warrants. They should always double-check whether or not someone has been arrested before trying to serve an arrest warrant on them at multiple places. But this, you and I discussed a couple days ago, was never actually about arresting the ex-boyfriend. It was never about trying to find an alleged drug dealer. And let me point out, because this is the key fact, when they searched Breonna Taylor's apartment, they found no contraband, no guns that were illegal, only her boyfriend's licensed, registered, legal gun. They found no drugs, no evidence of prior drugs or any illegal activity whatsoever. But as the video that I sent you showed, there's now an ongoing lawsuit. This case was not about trying to find drugs. It was not about trying to clean up the streets.
This is what we're going to get into. Sorry to interrupt because we're coming up on that commercial break. But what the bomb that you're getting ready to drop is real heavy. No, we want you to drop it because that's what this show is about today, to keep up with the facts that we should have all known. Every time the news mainstream comes on, we should have been aware of what our guest is getting ready to take us on a turn that really is something worthy to listen to and to learn as this case goes into another month. We're almost into September with no arrest. And you also made a mention that you said the mayor at first didn't take it serious. I mean, I thought that was powerful when you said that the mayor did not take the shooting of Breonna Taylor incident serious. I'd like to know what you mean by that, and we got like a minute before the commercial.
He didn't do much, not even a vocal public apology. The reason why we're confused on dates, other than there's so many unfortunate shootings it's hard to keep track of, is the unrest on the ground really didn't start to ramp up until the George Floyd protest in Minnesota, and then it comes down here, and people say, hey, we had our own shooting not that long ago. But in that interim time between Breonna Taylor's shooting and George Floyd's shooting, the mayor really didn't think much of or speak much of the Breonna Taylor shooting. He didn't want to lead. But once the fervor, once the anger started to draw up here in our city, that's when he finally came forward and tried his public apology and said that he's going to have a review board look into things and talk about maybe doing something at some point. But he didn't take it seriously until the George Floyd shooting started the national protest.
And then, as you stated, Louisville was already protesting. So it sounds like he was just ignoring that. Louisville
Correct.
Has been protesting.
The protests were small until it became national, and that's when he started paying attention.
This is just an outrage, and we're talking about Mayor Greg Fisher of Louisville, Kentucky, who has the power to at least initiate. I think you said the state attorney really has the power to get these officers arrested, fired. All of them sound like they should be fired, but I can't say that. I don't have all of the evidence. We are happy that one of the officers have been fired, but that leaves him open to gain additional employment somewhere else. This just has to stop. All right, we're going into a commercial break to thank our sponsors for making this program possible today, because without them, we cannot do it. You're listening to Nia 2X Radio, the voice of the people. This program is called Express Yourself. Keep it right here. Don't go anywhere. Booker ML is one of our favorite authors of today. Her eye-opening advice to everyone is, it's not about dying, it's about living and preserving your memory. Her must-read book is titled, It's Not About Me, It's About Them. Listen, every family and person should get her book for not only themselves, but they make wonderful gifts because it's a complete guide, step by step, to be prepared when the inevitable time that death touches any one of us. Her book guides the reader, relaxes the reader, and the advice is priceless. It's not about me. It's about them. find her book today online at wrappedinone.com. Now, that's WRAPPED dash N, the letter, dash, the number, 1.com. So that's wrappedinone.com. It's not about me. It's about them. It's 30 pages of powerful advice. When that time comes for those left behind and want to mourn without the additional lack of information that we have an opportunity to get before that time comes for your loved one, your friend, and yourself, ourselves. We can set up these things that will come into play at the time of death. So that's wrappedinone.com, WRAPPED-N, letter, dash, the number, 1.com. Also, co-sponsoring this portion of the program is the Caribbean Grill. The Caribbean Grill is a Jamaican eatery with three convenient locations, 7037 Martin Luther King Highway in Hyattsville, Maryland, or stop by in District Heights, Maryland. That's 6041 Marlboro Pike and in Landover, Maryland. They're serving at 7756 Landover Road. They're open Monday through Saturday. All three location hours are 11 to 9 and Sundays 11 to 7 p.m. Oh, by the way, in Hyattsville and District Heights, get in on their daily open buffet lunch for only $12.95. That's $12.95 at the Caribbean Grill, a Jamaican eatery. You can visit at www.mycaribbeangrill.com. All right, thank you to our sponsors. We really appreciate what they do to help us bring positive information on our profanity-free podcast radio. And that's Nia2X Radio, the voice of the people. You can also find us at VLBProductions.com or blackonblackunity.com. You get to that home page, click radio information. Now we're back with our guest on one of the most important programs we have done this year. And it is talking about the Breonna Taylor case that took place March 13th, 2020 in Louisville, Kentucky. And we have a guest from the county commissioner of the 8th District of Louisville, Kentucky. In Louisville, they have three districts, A, B, and C. Our guest, Daniel Grossberg, again, the county commissioner of the 8th District of Louisville, Kentucky, is here sharing. He's been on the ground. He's been protesting. He's been raising a lot of concerns as an activist, if you will, or a congressman, one that is certainly on the side of right to help bring solutions and attention to the area of Louisville, Kentucky, because we around the country, at least here in D.C., I'm not getting the information that he is here sharing. Now, put on your seatbelt, because he is getting ready to share. He's getting ready to share information that the Breonna case has taken just recently, and we want to hear all about it. Mr. Grossberg, please share with us what has taken place in the last couple days about this case.
It's been a little more than a couple of days, but Breonna Taylor's family, of course, hired an attorney, and a good attorney doesn't just take a case at face value, but does some investigation. And the question always lingered, why? Why did the police, when they already had arrested their suspect, why did they execute an arrest warrant at someone else's house who was tangentially at best related. Remember, this is Breonna Taylor's ex-boyfriend who was already in custody. But why do they still feel the need to knock down her door in the middle of the night? And what other doors did they knock down in the middle of the night? And why those doors? Well, the attorney's investigation has uncovered that this entire development was slated for demolition and gentrification, and that some of the mayor and the city fat cat's friends were going to make millions and millions of dollars redeveloping that area. And before you can redevelop the area, you have to get the residents out. So they were using the police as an eviction service to scare people out of their communities.
I mean, that's heavy. That's heavy what you just said. Gentrification is involved, allegedly, from her attorney. When I say her attorney, at least her family's attorney. Yeah. And his name is Sam
Aguiar.
Aguiar. Yeah, I didn't want to mess that up. Is he the only attorney?
He is not the only attorney. They have several different attorneys. But Sam Aguiar is the one who discovered this development plan. And Louisville, like most cities, including yours, Washington, D.C., are regularly under development, and they typically take the poorest areas and drive the people out, and the land is cheap, and then rebuild it there. And they say that it's better, but it's better in terms of they no longer have to think about or look at brown and black people. But it really isn't about the color of their skin so much as the color of money. This is all about the green. This is some already rich people wanted to get richer, and they leveraged their influence over the government to do their dirty work for them. So rather than buying people out, rather than finding them affordable housing elsewhere, rather than coming up with some comprehensive solution to work together, it was let's terrorize the people of the neighborhood, get them to all want to move out, and then we can swoop in and take their land. And they certainly didn't intend for anybody to die in part of that plan, but they didn't care what would happen. All they cared about was getting richer. And the mayor's office has insisted that this is all just a big coincidence. It's all a big coincidence that 80% of the warrants were served in that very small area that was slated for redevelopment. I don't believe in coincidences like that.
Not at all. That's a huge turn in the case, and I want to make sure that all of us caught what you just said, because it's huge. Basically, you're saying from the attorney who has filed on the city council floor, Sam Aguiar has filed and has had the mayor come out of his office and answer the allegations, that with the Breonna Taylor case, instead of it just being a case of going to so-called arrest a drug dealer who was already locked up, it is really something bigger behind that, connected to gentrification, as just explained to us by our guest, Daniel Grossberg. And he has evidence, because he's right. He has sent me a video that states just what he said when this attorney, along with some other city council people, President David James of the Louisville Metro Council, and also another councilman who said, look, we didn't know anything about this, and it's coming across to us for the very first time. Of course, the mayor is denying it. But again, the allegation is the tactic, as Mr. Grossberg just said, wasn't to go kill anybody. That horrible accident did take place. I won't say accident, but incident did take place. But more or less, it was a scare tactic. It was to make the residents that live there say, you know what, I'm getting out of here, because you know, this is just another reason why we need to just leave this area. Let's talk about that particular area that the city and the big dollar bills want to come and gentrify. Please explain to us what's the name of that area and what is it like living in that area?
Well, there are lots of different sub-areas of the city, but most of the poverty, in fact, the poorest zip code in the entire state is in the Russell neighborhood, which is a part of West Louisville. And I should disclose to everyone that I am a real estate agent and investor for a living, so I'm very familiar with this stuff. It is ripe for gentrification if you think gentrification is a good thing. And I don't think it's a good thing, but it's something that has happened a lot in Louisville. And I can tell you, if you look at the numbers on the books, analytically speaking, if you care more about money than anything else, this is where you want to start buying up the land and start developing. Because one of the things they started doing recently, not that far away, was tearing down the original housing projects from the 1960s to redevelop the entire area as mixed use. And that then spills over to other nearby adjacent areas. It really is just, once again, a plan to make money. Breonna Taylor's life didn't mean anything to them. They didn't target her. They didn't say, let's go ahead and kill her. So I would say that the situation on behalf of the investors isn't murder. The situation is manslaughter because they had such a disregard for her life and for everyone else who lives there. They didn't care. If you play around with a gun showing it off and accidentally shoot somebody, even though the shooting is an accident, you are responsible for manslaughter because your reckless behavior of playing with the gun caused their death. And here, the investors' reckless behavior of using the police force as their private eviction service, that was reckless to the point that it led to someone's death, and I think that they are responsible for manslaughter, and I would argue that the city officials who were in on this investment plan were as well. And this is not the first crooked or corrupt investment plan that we've seen from the city where the fat cats benefit and where very suspicious activities take place. I mean, you and I could spend 10 shows on it, but I don't know that a nationwide audience would be that interested because the other ones didn't result in a death like this. And that's what makes this one unique, but people need to draw an eye to it because there's always an intersectionality. Nothing is that simple. When you talk about the criminal justice system and race relations, you do also have to talk about affordable housing and job security and providing good health. You know, for example, when you were discussing the defund the police move recently, it's not about let's just take money away from the police. It's let's take that money and solve problems. A lot of police calls are because homeless people are loyal, technically a crime, but where are they going to go if you don't have affordable housing? Quite often it's someone who is mentally ill, can't afford treatment, can't get to their treatment, can't afford their medication, and the police are doing that. We use increasingly militarized. We should have a force of social workers to help with and access to medication, but more importantly, we as a society should prioritize that over the almighty dollar. We should prioritize the well-being of our fellow men and women over watching other people get rich.
Louisville, Kentucky. Yes, sir. Louisville, Kentucky. What is the percentage of blacks that live in Louisville, Kentucky, to your knowledge?
It's in the mid-30s. Mid-30s, but this is an area that is overwhelmingly African American. The city is unfortunately largely de facto segregated. There's no legal segregation that forces it, but there are decidedly parts of town that are predominantly white and parts of town that are predominantly black. And what happens with the gentrification is they don't just take the buildings that are there and in disrepair and make them look nicer and have the same people live there. What happens is almost without exception, black and brown people are pushed out, either forced out or the prices get so high that they can't live there anymore, and they are replaced by white people. And then there's fewer and fewer places for brown and black people to live, and then they're blamed for not having housing.
And gentrification, Yeah, I think we are very familiar with the process. I appreciate you breaking it down. It is the systematic. It's a system pushed by government and big developers in the interest, as our guest, Daniel Grossberg from Louisville, Kentucky, has been explaining to us the whole interview. It's all about the big money to them. They could care less. And we have a good perspective on gentrification. We are experiencing it for almost 20 years now all over the country. So Louisville is no exception to the rule.
Yes.
And again, you mentioned, and we want to remind everyone, that Louisville, Kentucky is the home of the late, great Muhammad Ali. He came right out of Louisville, Kentucky, and this is where Breonna Taylor was raised. And again, our guest, Daniel Grossberg, has told us that Breonna Taylor and her boyfriend had clean records. They were not criminals. They
Correct.
Were not
mm-hmm.
associated with low life. We know her to be in the medical field, and he had a license for his weapon and had a right to defend himself. That's why he purchased a weapon. You purchase a weapon to either have contests or what have you, but most of us purchase weapons to defend ourselves. So he purchased his weapon, Kenneth Walker, legally, and was still arrested and traumatized, I'm sure, because he was actually there with his girlfriend at the time, Breonna Taylor, at the shooting death of Breonna Taylor. Now, one great thing also about you, Mr. Grossberg, you're not just a talker. You are one that has not only been able to express yourself with articulate information, but you're a man of action. Tell us a little bit more about what you have just gone through there in Louisville to make change, not just talk about it, but to make change, please.
I thank you. I just got off of a primary where I challenged the longest serving elected official in the Commonwealth, 47 years in office, and I didn't get him this time, but I'm coming back again next time. But I ran on a platform of economic development that benefits all, affordable housing and medication for all, good education for all. And I think that those messages are going to resonate, and God willing, in 2 years, we're not distracted by COVID and stuck at home, and I'll have a better opportunity to meet with the voters face-to-face and share my message, because I'm not happy with the status quo. And I said that the entire election cycle. If you like things the way they are and you don't want anything different, go ahead, keep electing the same people. But if you think it's time for a change, we need to elect new people. And that's what I would tell to all of your listeners throughout the whole country is look at your ballot. You can get it online, and if you don't have access to the internet at home, you can go to a public facility. But look at your ballot before you vote, and if there are names there that you don't know and there are races that you don't know about, look them up. Inform yourself. The single most powerful weapon in the world is the power of the vote.
Now, a lot of people hear that, and a lot of people contest it, not based on knowledge, based on what happened in Florida with Al Gore, what happened just in 2016 when Mrs. Clinton received almost 3 million popular votes, and then people hear but are not clear about the Electoral College. So they just use that. They don't go study. They just hear those three, maybe one of the three, and they start believing their one vote will not, does not count. What do you tell them?
I tell them that there is a state representative here in Kentucky, one of the very, very, very few African-American state representatives, who won his last election by one single vote. And you don't know when it's going to be that election. You're going to be that one voter. Better to go out and vote and say, my vote didn't make the difference, than to stay home and watch someone you don't like get reelected and spend the rest of your life regretting that you didn't get out there and vote. But more importantly, even if you are going to win anyway, there's something about the chorus of voices. It disappoints me when I hear people say they're not going to join me at one of the protests because we already have plenty of people without them. But every additional voice to that chorus adds power. It adds value. And similarly, every single person who remains silent gives consent to the people in power. So in an election where you don't think you're going to win and your side's not going, doesn't have a good chance, you still get out there and vote and exercise your voice because you want the other side to know that they don't have as many people behind them as they think they do, that there are a lot of discontented people, and those numbers may not be at the tipping point yet, but you don't have to wait until you have a majority to have your voice heard.
Thank you. Do you have an opinion as we get ready to wrap it up? And we will do a part two because there's so much more to this case. Breonna Taylor's mother has filed a lawsuit. We're not getting that information. There are, again, the men and women that have been marching nonstop. They have not missed one day to get these officers arrested and fired and hopefully brought to court on the shooting death of Breonna Taylor. Your opinion, Daniel Grossberg, if for any reason you're just tuning in, our guest, Mr. Daniel Grossberg, is the county commissioner of the 8th District of Louisville, Kentucky. Donald Trump is running, and Joe Biden is running. Donald Trump getting back into the White House, if that happens from a lack of voting from the listeners, how do you see that next 4 years?
I see it as the end of democracy. This is a man who has basically told us who he is from the start, and his apologists say that he's joking, but at every turn he follows through with his jokes. He says he's going to ban Muslims from entering the country. People say, oh, he's just joking. He has a Muslim ban. Luckily, the Supreme Court shot it down before he modified it from a Muslim ban to a ban of a bunch of countries that just happen to be Muslim, and that passes, whatever. He says that he's going to build a wall. People say he's just kidding. He builds a wall. He says that he's going to pack the courts with his own people, and he does it, even though people said he was just kidding. Now he's saying that if he is reelected, he's going to ask that they end the term limits for president and make him president for life, just like they did in communist China. And people say he's just kidding. I don't want to take that risk. And he said that if he doesn't win the election, he's going to contest the results and refuse to leave office. And some people say he's just kidding. I don't want to take that risk. And even before we get to that point, he has said maybe we should cancel the elections for the first time in U.S. history until COVID is over. And then people said, but he's just kidding. I don't want to take that chance. The most powerful thing we can do to stand up to someone like that is to go out there and vote. Because if we win this thing by 2 or 3 or 5%, he will forever say that the system was rigged and that the deep state conspired to remove him from office. But if we win big, if we win by 20 or 25 points, and we win two-thirds of the Electoral College votes, he's going to have a much time selling his conspiracy theory nonsense.
Oh, thank you so much. And one great important point our guest just said was the federal judges that Donald Trump has already appointed. Federal judges around the country. He's appointed two Supreme Court justices. We cannot afford to let him get back in the White House to put any more judges in place in federal court, appellate court, because he's already done it by the advice of others that we know he doesn't know anything about government. But they have given him advice that's not helpful to we, the citizens, that want to see a democracy. I mean, we're not seeing it. But without your vote, we are only sealing our own coffins. Your one vote counts. Your one vote counts. Make sure you register to vote. You know, no, voting doesn't have all of the answers. Of course not. But the answers that it does have, exercise your right, especially black people, for others that did everything they could in their power so that we could exercise that right. We want to say thank you to our wonderful guest on part one of the Breonna Taylor's case. He's coming back because he didn't really let loose on all that he's involved in. He's involved in a lot of the solutions taking place in Louisville, Kentucky, for all citizens, regardless of their nationality, regardless of their employment or unemployment, education, and vice versa. He is there for the people. And we're talking about Daniel Grossberg. Remember his name. If you know people in that area, make sure they come and hear more about him. He'll give his contact details, his email, but he's coming back so that we can continue to inform anyone that wants to know more about the case and what's taking place in Louisville, Kentucky. Sir, you had 30 seconds. Your final comments, please.
Thank you so much for those warm wishes. Anyone who wants to find out more about me can look on my campaign site, Grossberg, G-R-O-S-S-B-E-R-G, the number 4, K-Y. That's the website, that's Facebook, that's Instagram, that's Twitter. But I want to part with, if we could just pray for the many protesters throughout the country who are putting their lives at risk every day, asking for justice for so many black and brown people who have not had it for far too long, that these people are on the front lines facing police brutality, tear gas, rubber bullets, and sometimes worse. So let us pray for them, and let us pray for the many good officers out there, because they're not all bad, the ones who are fighting for justice, so that someday we can all live in peace and harmony.
And that day is on its way from leaders like you and many, many more. We want to thank you, Mr. Daniel Grossberg. We thank our audience. We certainly thank our sponsors. And remember, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. Thank you for listening. Keep it right here. I'm Nia2X on Nia2X Radio, our profanity-free broadcast. Peace to everyone, but stay in the fight till we get it right.